Welcome to the Women in STEM podcast that focuses on the intersectionality of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. We focus on how we can amplify the voices of women in STEM and make them aware of the multiple different career opportunities that are available. Welcome to the Women in STEM podcast. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Okay, hi, my name is Jo Mentier. I'm from Lagos. I'm from Nigeria, from Delta State in Nigeria. I am a product designer with over 6 years of work experience. This has spanned different industries. So I've worked in fintech, blockchain, education, hospitality, and most recently, still finance-based, but CFDs. Yeah, I just completed a master's last October in creative technology. So apart from working as a product designer, I would say I'm a creative technologist because I still dabble in a few things and a few projects that I picked up from there. I am also a design mentor. I mentor students in Design Lab and also do some mentoring on ADP List, which is a free platform where people can book talks and book sessions with me to discuss anything from getting started in tech, doing interview preps, and basically reviewing their portfolios and their resumes. Yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Can you tell us a bit more about your journey into product design and what inspired you to pursue this as your career field?
Okay, so my journey in tech was very, very unusual because I started off as learning software engineering, actually. I was in a workshop school in Lagos that taught you different technologies, so HTML, CSS, JavaScript, C#. So like the old, really old languages that were not really popular back then. And from doing that, I discovered graphic design, actually. I've always loved drawing. And when I found out I could do it digitally, it was like a eureka moment for me. I started exploring ways to do it, how to do it. So I started designing little by little. When I went to do my bachelor's, I did my bachelor's in Mauritius. When I went to do it there, I stumbled on a topic in a course I did for project management called heuristics evaluation. So from exploring heuristics evaluation, I realized that there is a part that is much more focused, that is still design related, but has this little fair of psychology, understanding people's mind and people's behavior, and that really appealed to me. From then on, it was just like a straight thing for me. Even though I was doing other things, that design was still at the back of my mind. I was doing it freelance for a while, before I now decided, okay, this is my full-time thing. Then I started looking for little courses I could do online. Back then, it was very hard. There were no like official boot camps to do learn UX design. So I stumbled on Udacity, on Coursera, on Udemy, that were doing little courses like that. And that's where I started learning. Then I got my first opportunity. I did an internship with a company in Singapore. I was an UX intern there for a while. And from then on, I've just been getting either freelance roles or full-time roles. Currently, I'm currently working full-time, but I've worked in both settings, so I'm kind of familiar with how they are.
Great. And how did your master's discipline contribute to your approach and your understanding of product design?
Okay, so my master's is something that I've always wanted to do. I've always been interested in doing design that is not just digital, but it's also physical. So my master's took me out of the box that's just doing UX work, UX design work has probably kept me in, and took me out to thinking about actual products, actual real things that exist and how you can design them, what you have to put into consideration, how they would influence people, what is like the end use case, who is it affecting, who are the people who are going to use it. So that was the thing for me. It took me out of just doing design. There's a lot of methodologies that is normally used in UX design normally. But for my master's, it took me to just the process of doing things like maybe like an engineer, because you have to problem solve first before you can come up with a solution. So that has really, really changed the way I approach design, because now when I want to solve anything currently in my work, I take my time to actually do the proper research. If I have to read papers, read research that has been done, proving theories, following psychological methods, that's what I do. That's what my master's has shown me, that that's the best way to do it. Design should not be just looking at what is in the computer and maybe at that moment when the person picks up a phone and opens an app. Design is, I wake up in the morning, I'm thinking about this thing. Okay, this app will solve this problem, and I do it. So what's the physical, what the things that people do outside the product they are using till they finish the task they want to do? That's how design has been for me now since my master's. So it's changed the way I look at approach problems. I picked up a lot of new skills because I did a lot of programming as well in my master's. So when I look at solutions, at the same time, I'm also thinking about what kind of technology would help me achieve the solution I want. That's how it's changed for me.
Wow, that's a huge transformation. Another transition that you've been through is going through the job hunting process, and you've moved from Nigeria to the UK. Can you speak on that a bit, and what were some of the challenges you faced, and how did you overcome them?
Okay, so when I was in Nigeria, I was working mostly remotely. I think almost all my roles, I think just one or two of my roles were based in Nigeria. Almost all my roles were fully remote. So I was kind of used to a very, very diverse environment before I came here. Now, the shift has been from being fully remote to having to go into an office. So the job search in the sense is that I first started off looking for fully remote mode because that was what I was used to. But from just even looking at the number of roles that were available, I could see that a lot of companies here in the UK prefer people to come into the office, which was like, okay, that's something I need to adapt to and adjust, because I believe if you want to succeed in wherever you have to understand how people get things done. So that was one of the first things I did. I noticed that that's the thing. So I said, okay, let's switch to that mindset that I would have to go into the office. Now, the job search has been interesting because it's been good and it's been weird in a way, because sometimes you just apply for a role today and in the next 30 minutes you can get a rejection, which can be very demoralizing. But at the same time, you have people who are actually willing to give you a chance, have a conversation with you, and trying to understand you as a person, the skills you have, how they fit into the role. And interestingly enough, I started job hunting during the Christmas period. So it was that huge Christmas break. Then I had to get back again in the new year. So it was very interesting that people would actually take that break. I was used to companies maybe in the US that they hardly take that Christmas break. They are sending you replies during the Christmas period. But here there was like a huge lull period where I didn't get any responses. And I had to make sure that my resume fits the standard that people are used to seeing here. So there's different ways people look at resumes in different countries, and the UK also has its own way. So I had to make sure that my resume fit that. I had to make sure that my portfolio was up to date, because if you're applying for roles as a designer, if it's not even an entry-level role, because I'm also a design mentor, we prepare students to go into the job market. And one of the things we do to do that is we help them craft case studies. So I had to make sure I had case studies that were at least up to date and fit the different markets and highlighted the different skills I wanted to show. That was the difference. The only difference is that I made really was that adapting to the fact that I had to go into the office, because design, applying for design and applying for design anyways, having a very good resume and having a portfolio that speaks for itself. Another interesting thing I had to pick up was crafting a very good cover letter. So luckily for me, we have ChatGPT now. When I was applying for roles, I knew what I wanted to say, but I had to say it in a way that would appeal to people. And that's one of the good things about AI. It helps you craft stuff in a very, very plain way or in a very interesting way. And you can specify the prompts you want it to say. So that's one thing I did. I made sure that I created cover letters that fits most of the roles with the help of ChatGPT. See, I would craft something, input it into ChatGPT. It helps me refine it. It tells me maybe I need to take out a sentence or maybe say it in a different way. That's what I did. So yeah, that was my journey into getting my current job.
Moving from one country to another and, experiencing another work environment, do you have any particular culture differences that you've noticed with regards to the UK workplace compared to Nigeria? And how did you adapt to them?
Yes, in the one of the things that happened has been different for me is the what's this thing they do. A lot of work events that I didn't really get a chance to do when I was in Nigeria, especially because I was fully remote. So we used to have work events, communication styles. People are a bit more soft in the way they handle things here. I think that's a huge difference because the places I've worked in, people were a bit more straightforward, more like highlighting it straight away. The UK is a bit different and you have to be able to communicate in a way that's it's not so offensive. It's a bit polite, but still passing across the message you want. That has been my experience so far. I don't think it's a bad thing. It helps you to communicate in a way that really thinks about the person you're talking to. So yeah, that I would say those are the things that really stand out to me. Apart from that, I haven't really had any major culture shocks, maybe because I've spent a lot of time with different kind of people. When you work with people from different parts of the world, you have to develop a certain way to communicate that anybody can understand you, regardless of language differences, cultural and ethnic differences. So I think over the years, I've picked up the skill to be able to do that in a way that I don't make people feel bad. I don't make anybody feel bad. But at the same time, it's not like I'm putting myself down. So that has been my way of doing things. And coming into a place where I have to go into the office, that's something I also do. So yeah, I feel like that's how it's been for me. It's not the only difference that I can really point out is that they have a lot of events I have to attend most times, which is quite different.
In your previous work experience, you worked both remotely and in the office. What are some of the pros and cons from each one of them? And how do you manage your productivity and staying motivated in both environments?
Okay. When I typically work, I like to prioritize tasks based on the level of importance that I need to do. So when I'm working in the office, when I have to go into the office and when I have to work remotely, that's how I do it. So if I have a task that is really, really important, I put it at the top of it. Now, because now I have to go into the office sometimes, it helps me to split that in a way because going into office, sometimes you might have to be dragged into one or two meetings. Then the difference between working from home is you are inside a place where everywhere is quiet. You are just focused on one thing. But when you're in the office, you have people talking everywhere. There's a lot of noise and a lot of sounds around you. So that has been the shift for me. That if I have to see something that has shifted for me, it's that I had to get used to an environment where there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of background sounds and having to be in a place that's completely quiet. That has been a major shift. So when I first started going into the office, back home in Nigeria, I didn't have a really much problem because we had more central offices that were not like soundproof, that people were not around me. But here it's a different place because my current office is open plan. So when I first started going to the office, I actually used to take noise cancelling headphones into work so that I could focus when people are talking. But I think for now I'm actually kind of used to the sounds I'm hearing. And I have, sometimes I just have like music playlists in the office that I listen to if I want to really focus. Working from home, it's easy for me because most times I can go stretches of hours without interruption because, yeah, I'm focused on one thing and there's not a lot of interruption. Maybe take like 30 minutes to have lunch. That's my normal thing I do. But it's easy for me to focus more because I'm working from home because it's something I'm used to over the years. I've been doing it for a few years. So I'm used to remote working more than actually going into the office. Going into the office, I can easily get distracted because of the people around me and the noise and the sounds. But working from home for me is that I can focus. So major pro for working from home, focus. I can get things done very fast and easily. In the office, it's a bit dicey, but we can manage it. Now, for the con for working from home, you can also get easily distracted. So there might be days you just don't have that motivation and you just want to take a nap. It's easy for you to do that when you're working from home. Very, very easy. And maybe there's a show you are watching or something that's really, or maybe you have family around. You can get easily distracted with that. So major con for that. Going into office, con, again, people. you can easily get swept up in a conversation and you're talking to somebody for 30 minutes and you don't know it's gone. Or you can get dragged into meetings and you're sitting in a meeting and you now have to put in some extra hours in the day just to complete a task that probably hasn't been deadline. Both sides, I feel like if you know how to prioritize your tasks in a way that you can actually measure expectations, like you can measure that. I know that even with all the meetings that might happen when in the office talking, I can actually complete this in this set amount of time. I think you can manage it regardless of where you are, home or in the office. Another cool thing is that some offices, like for instance, my office, they provide lunch, free lunch. So that's a pro for me for working in the office. And when I'm home, I have to start thinking about what I have to actually have for lunch. So yeah, that's a major difference.
Finding a new community in a new country can be challenging. How did you go about building your community and finding a sense of belonging in the UK? Quick break. Before we get back to our conversation, I want to remind you to follow, rate, and review the Women in STEM podcast on whatever streaming platform. Your support really helps us to reach more listeners and continue to bring inspiring stories and valuable insight. Don't forget to share this episode with your friends and colleagues who might be interested in learning a bit more about women in STEM. Also, make sure to check out our new LinkedIn page, the Women in STEM podcast, where you get to see some of the latest advancements in technology and learn more about women in STEM. And please make sure to check the bio to see where you can vote for the Women in STEM podcast.
Okay, so luckily for me, I have a few friends who are already here, and a few who came here like the same time I came or after me. It's been cool because meeting those people again and having talking to them has made it easy for me to kind of integrate and kind of talk to the people. Then I've been using apps like Eventbrite. They have a lot of cool free events you attend, or even events that are not so expensive, but at least affordable enough that you can attend. I also joined one of the first communities I joined when I came to the UK. I actually can't remember how I stumbled upon that. I think I remember now how I stumbled upon it. I went for Black Tech Fest, and I think I met a lot of interesting people there. That was one of the first places that opened me into events and going for community stuff and really trying to build a way of communicating with people here. So from Black Tech Fest, I met Color in Tech. They're a community that they do events almost, they do monthly events 2 3 times a month. I'm always trying to go for a few of them. And they do events that span different topics. So from navigating in a new community, or even the last one I went to, they did an event for founders, matching founders to the talent, which was pretty interesting. People who are founders who are probably looking for talent in their company and maybe they're just somebody to build from something for them from scratch. So that was pretty interesting. So Color in Tech is one that I really look at helping me build a community because I've met a few people, exchange numbers, we communicate there. We go to other events. We look at what we can do together. I also go for events from a place called GT Black Women, GTA Black Women. Yeah, Global Tech Advocates. Yes, Black Women. That one is really cool. They had a really nice summer event, and I went for that. And they talked about what they've been building so far, which was pretty really interesting. And to be honest, just even having those 2 places has been really helful for me for meeting new people, looking at what people are building in the ecosystem. Because as somebody who is already in the tech industry, I'm in fintech, but I'm also interested in what people are building that is general. So I like knowing new technologies that are coming out. I like knowing what people are using those technologies to do and how they are using it. So going for those events has helped me, has opened me up to that. I've been able to see all that. I've been able to talk to people who are building, understand the challenges they face while building. But that has been my thing. Then ADP list. I went for one event with ADP list, which was quite interesting. We had the event in the pub, so it was interesting because I could meet people. I met a lot of people who actually just moved to the UK that period, and were actually looking for jobs. So it was quite interesting to hear their own experiences, what they are doing currently, how they are navigating spaces, how they are navigating spaces, preparing themselves to get into jobs. So that has been helpful too, because one of the things that happens when you are new in the country is you kind of feel isolated or alone if you don't know other people who are going through the same thing as you. When I went to that event, it was just like an eye-opener that everybody's going through similar stuff, and if we all work together, we can actually do something and actually like achieve the goals, which is like that period was trying to get a job. So that has been what has helped me, is maybe the currently existing communities I know and the ones I've joined currently. Then I'm also always on the lookout for new ones, because I also want to explore things that is not just tech. Like recently I volunteered at a creative digital festival in somewhere in on that University of Arts London. They did a festival, so I volunteered at that, so I could see what people were also building, like the creative technology stuff island. I could see what people were building there, what they have built, and they were showcasing different artists. It was pretty interesting because there's a lot of really, really niche events like that that, to be honest, I won't really find in Nigeria, if I have to be 100% with you. I won't see that. It's quite very, very different. So that has been the way I've been trying to just build a way to integrate and also communicate with people and build a sense of belonging here in the UK.
You have experienced both freelance projects, which I know can be quite a popular way of working, but you've also worked in very large design teams. How did those dynamics differ, and which do you prefer?
Okay, for the freelance projects, most times you end up being the individual contributor. You're probably the only designer in the team. You probably be working with engineers, other product managers, business analysts, and so forth. And for the big design teams, it's pretty cool because you have a lot of support that you won't get if you are the only contributor. So if I had to say, my experience with the freelance has just been maybe short spurts. I work on a project for a few months. We deliver, it's done, and most times it ends there. Or it's the ongoing relationship that they call on me whenever there's a project they need my skills for. And for the full-time one, because it's a big team, you can, okay, maybe you have a design problem that you've done your research, you've done everything, and there's nothing that can be done to it. You can always reach out to somebody who is always willing to support. And that's the huge difference, because in the individual, as an individual contributor, you are the one that is trying to pass your knowledge across to everybody that is not in the UX design field or a product designer. But in the other one, when you have a big team, you have a lot of support around you. People who can back you up, you share knowledge. So one of the things that happens with designers sometimes is they don't know how to get feedback and they don't know how to receive feedback. And that's a thing that, and if you have been an individual contributor for a very long time, it becomes something that would affect the way you see design, because you feel like you're the only one. So you can get a sense of ego. With being in a big team, you would have to have other designers critiquing your work, and you should be able to understand what they're saying, listen to it, and accept it. And you should be able to say, okay, this is what I require from you at this moment. That's the big difference as an individual contributor and being in a full big design team. If I had to pick the one I would prefer, to be honest, I would prefer to be in a big team because it's growth for you as a designer. It's big. But being an individual contributor, it's good too. You can get to experience different industries. That's one of the advantages I would see in that. If you're somebody who is interested in working maybe in fintech, maybe you want to do social, you want to do a social site, or you are interested in hospitality, AI, whatever. As an individual contributor, it's very, very easy for you to do that because you can be in multiple places, multiple teams, work with different companies. That's the really, really good part of it. You get to expand your knowledge on different topics. But for the big team, is your growth as a designer is really, really pushed. Because you have other designers who will probably be critiquing your work as well as you. You have to catch up, you have to keep up with it. That's the big the difference. But at this point in my career, I would actually stick to that because I still feel like I have a lot of room to grow. I still want to still continue growing as a designer. So, yeah, the big thing.
As a design mentor, what advice do you give to young designers who are looking to break into the industry, especially ones who are wanting to also move to a new country for opportunities.
Okay, that's two tiers, that question. For the ones who want to break into the industry, I always tell them to look at what's their interest in. So design in itself is not linear. So you can be a UX researcher, you can be a service designer, you can be a UX writer, you can be an interaction designer, you can be just a UI designer, you can be just a UX designer, it can be a product designer. So I always advise people to look at what your interests are. Before you want to even break in, you should have, okay, these are the things that you can do as a designer. It's not just opening a tool, da 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 da, it's done. Design is more than that. So you as a person, you need to really explore what you want to do. If you feel like you're somebody who wants to do everything, cool, you can be a product designer. If you're somebody who probably looks at that stage of the customer journey from them waking up to go out to do something and interacting with a business, service designer. If you're somebody who probably maybe you came from a marketing background and you were a writer or something, straight away UX writer. If you're somebody who is just like how things look nice, I will push you to a UI designer. So there are different parts. Then there's now exploring what industry are you interested in. So I always tell people, if you're somebody who you already have an interest in something, you are breaking in, you probably come from a different background. I always try and tell them that to look at a way to merge that different background into your UX work or your design work. I've spoken to mentees that are interested in UX design. I spoke to one that was a doctor, a practicing doctor. And if you even look at her case studies, they were really medical related. I've had a mentee who was just straight up fintech. She was she I think she studied maths, so she was very, very interested in the fintech industry. So when she's looking for jobs or looking for topics, she always goes straight to look for fintech stuff. So it's really just merges together. I've spoken to one who was a photographer and a videographer. That kind of person would fit into somewhere like Netflix or even somewhere that does filming that needs designers straight away, because he already has leverage against other designers who have not been in the industry. So breaking into design from another career, it's really, really advantageous to just pull up on those strengths you had previously from your previous career. Think about how you can use design in that field. So that's what I mostly tell my mentees, that they should do that, because learning design can be hectic if there's no interest or passion in it. The way I mentor, I do paid mentorship. We do a boot. It's a boot camp. It takes about 6 to 8 months to complete the course. That's a lot of effort. So if you can't really, really think about the area which you want to really, really focus on, it becomes difficult for you to even learn the skills you need to actually succeed as a designer. So that's that group, that is what I really, really tell them. So that it pushes them to say, okay, I don't have to throw away my previous knowledge. I can still carry it with me. There's also research that shows that a lot of companies tend to want to look at people who are coming in from other disciplines because they have a richer like they have richer knowledge. So it's much more addition for those businesses. Now, for the people for moving to another country, it's practically going through the same route I did when I was looking for a job. Make sure that your CVs, your resume matches the standard that they are looking for in the new country. Make sure that you try and understand the way they communicate from the interview process, from the first one till you probably get an offer. And another thing I had to learn is try and understand the laws in that country. If you're moving to a different country, you need to understand the laws. You need to succeed in that country, to be honest. So those are the things I try and cover. I try and tell people, like, because I've actually had somebody reach out to me who just moved to here. So these are the things I told her, that this is what I would do, or this is what I did. And I would say you should actually just go the same route because it has helped me succeed.
With your diverse range of experience and knowledge, how do you see your role in product design evolving in the future? And what skills do you think are most important?
Okay, so because I'm interested in a lot of things, I think I would always want to still be like somebody who still does design work. I might be a manager. If I want to say, okay, I would be promoted, get a manager role, all that, I would still want to actually open the tool and do the design work, because I feel like once you're in that role and you're telling people what to do, what to do, you might start forgetting some of the basics. So one important skill I would always highlight is that always being able to go back to the drawing board, going back to maybe just sketching out solutions instead of opening a tool to do it. So having that mindset that when I'm doing work, or if how far I go, I should always be able to go back to the beginning to really understand the problem, to really say, okay, this is what I'm thinking about, this is the problem, this is how it is, these are the people, doing a mind map before you even get into a tool, designing something that has a lot of color, all that. Being able to go back to the basics is so key. It makes you think wider than what you expect. So maybe you have a problem, you say this is the features, these are the requirements. If you are not able to always go back, you're always jumping straight to, oh yeah, this is what we'll sort, this is what we'll sell, this is what would people would like. You tend to forget and miss out on people, other people, or miss out on other requirements, or miss out on other paths that customers will take, because human beings are very interesting. We are not linear people. Design is trying to guess what people will do. And nobody ever doesn't do the same thing. We don't act the same way. So being able to always go back and look at, oh yeah, what of this? What of that? How is this person doing it? What is this person doing? Who is this person? Where did they live? What did they do? Being able to always go back is the key skill, regardless of how far I would go in design. And to be honest, just doing just digital work is key, because the world is digital. But being able to also build things from scratch, physical stuff, is really important. I feel like much more physical technology is going to start existing with the current state of the world I'm seeing. A lot of people would still need to touch something physical. So that's something that's always going to be at the back of my mind, well, no matter how far I go in my career, because I feel like it's very, very important.
Reflecting on your journey from Nigeria to the UK, what lessons have you learned with regards to resilience, adaptation, and personal growth that you would like to share with the listeners?
Yeah, so I would pick personal growth, because I feel like the way I was doing design 2 to 3 years ago has completely changed. I used to be very, very impatient, to be honest. And I used to like the level of confidence in my solutions were not as high as it is right now. I think being able to actually do that master's, learn a few things, do mentoring, because I actually started mentoring like a year ago, almost the same period I started my master's. So that period has just changed my thought process, the way I handle design, the way I handle feedback, the way I talk to colleagues, the way I pass across information. So that has been key. So I would say people should actually do something different. Try and do something different, because you can easily get stuck in a rut as a designer. You're just doing the same thing every day, every day, every day. It's easy to get stuck in a rut. So just do something different. Do something different. Get something that is not really, really designed, like not pushing pixels. We call designers that they're pixel pushers. Do something that's not pushing pixels. And you'd see the way your mindset kind of shifts. It's that would be my advice for people, for designers that actually have been doing design for a while. Do something different. For adapting, it's been a process, because you have to talk to people. So a lot of designers you would learn, most of them are very introverted. You have to try. You have to bring yourself out of that box. Go to one small meetup, another small meetup, one small meetup, and before you know it, you're talking to people. It's a skill to socialize, I know, but you have to pull yourself out of that box you are in. So I would say those are the two major things I would highlight.
And how best can people connect with you?
Okay, so LinkedIn and Twitter. I have a Twitter account. It's very easy to remember, Joe Mentier. On LinkedIn, my name is my name on LinkedIn. Send me a message. I'm almost always going to reply you on there. And actually, I think I'm quite fast with replying on LinkedIn as opposed to even Twitter. Yeah, I have an Instagram, but I hardly post there. Maybe I should actually start posting. But yeah, those are the places I'm currently active for people to talk to me.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on the Women in STEM podcast and for sharing your story.
Thank you. It was great to talk about this and to share my knowledge. I'm always open to conversations. I've had a few people who have reached out to me for mentorship, like just to have a conversation, maybe review their portfolio. So I'm always also open to that. If you need help for me to go through your CV, go through your portfolio, give you some tips, I'm always down for that.
Listeners, if you've enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite streaming platform, leave a review and rating to help us reach more listeners, and follow our social medias, the latest updates and behind the scene content. Join us next week for another exciting episode. And until then, keep exploring the world of STEM and empowering women in STEM.